funktioniert leider nicht gut. Deswegen habe ich das nicht.
Unless there's an objection on the amendments. The amendments to the objection of personal information book. No objections? Agreed to? Yes. Just one administrative matter. I've asked Lenore to circulate the letter that the deputy speaker has written to the minister informing him the committee's report that was adopted by the National Assembly and the Magistrate. It's just that additional process that we assume is done and quite often made by nothing special. So here's at least the letter that went to the minister, who was present in the House at the time. Alright, now, shortness.
Thank you, Chairperson. The agency proposes that we should list 5 candidates. 5 candidates. We should list
15. I will remember that the civil union proposes a short list of 5 names. Yes, what is saying is in principle they have no objection to the number 5, but in the event that there's a candidate or even a second one that should be considered, will you allow that flexibility?
Yes, we allow that flexibility. Also, let me add to the that if the ANC we have decided that we have the ANC not a member of the justice committee. The other one will be the only one is from the ANC. Can I proceed?
Yes. You may proceed.
The first names that we submit is number 1, Advocate Josephine Rally Fatane. She is CV number 40. And then the second one is Advocate M.F. Kutwane. She is CV number 51. And then the third one, Advocate Shafi Amiru Nia, CV number 18. The fourth one is Dr. Majori Thompson, CV number 54. And 54. Right. And then the last one is Ndombo DDM. So, CV number 10.
CV number 10. Okay. HRC 40 was the first one. Second one is HRC 51. Third one is HRC 41. Please correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Sivanini. Fourth one was HRC 54, third was HRC 41, and the last, fifth one was HRC. Third was 18. Oh, my apologies. And the fifth one is HRC 10. Okay. Okay.
Unfortunately, only one of those coincides with mine, and I have 6. some item is Unitas 9U. Now this is the young lady who actually got settled to the number which is here. She therefore didn't even have a number. She was nominated by Mary Dahan. We made quite sure, if you remember, that she had accepted her nomination. She sent a letter to that effect. So she is Unitas 9U and has no number. And you will remember that we expressed our concern at the leftovers that somebody sees it got settled or something like that. My second question would be number 15, as we can see in the book. Number 16, Mr. Clark. Number 17, Mr. William Gumere. The advocate, Shafi Amiria, is also on my list. Lastly, Professor Jai Touch, number 28. The first was Kunika Naidu, no number. Then number 15, 16, 17, 18, and 28.
Number one is?
Number two times.
Yes, and the number is? 40.
Okay. And the other
40, 18, 17, 28,
and 63.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
time they read the Vedanta Sutra, the local papers around, and maybe now go and read with attention those nominations that that party has made. Just for the record, it's maybe worth just reminding ourselves that we're working under Section 193, which means we are looking for people who are South Africans, but we've got and comply with any requirements in the law, but there are no requirements in the Act as it stands. So that's what we're going to change. But it goes without saying that we're looking for people with an understanding of track record and a check in.
Stuff suggests now that we have our various lists that we extract those CDs from these two big files and go through them. And when we next review, we'll meet on the matter. Thank you.
this online yesterday, especially this week, I started looking at it online last night, and I was quite encouraged to really fascinate the government.
Thank you very much, Chair. I would have liked to have submitted this document earlier. I'm sorry, there are also one or two issues that I, as you say, haven't attended to. Some of them I managed to do last night, so the information won't be in the document, but when we get there, I'll tell you what has been done. You'll note the top of the document is for the meeting of the Portfolio Committee on the 24th of July. I think we must keep on doing that, but we don't lose track of the living documents, because I'm sure there'll be a few. And I also want to point out to members that we haven't done any renumbering or cross-referencing it. I think that would come at a later stage once everyone's issues have been settled, because there might be some changes to the formatting of the board and structure of the board. And what I haven't done, and what we've been promising to do, is that audit of provisions that require regulations to be made. We must identify all of those, and then also try and assist the committee. You've asked the department to assist the committee in suggesting what should be done in consultation or after consultation. I have started with that, but in the process of redrafting and to give effect to some of the proposals that were made in the discussions up to date, we're finding that there are additions of areas where regulations might have to be made or rules have to be made. So I would like to suggest that that order be done also towards the end. So I'll try to set out as far as I possibly can in footnotes to assist the committee, to prompt the committee. The proposals must be seen in the light that they're not our proposals, and they are, I understand that there's a lot of discussion that needs to be done, so if issues are underlined or bold, those I don't want to try and suggest that the departments view that to assist the committee in its deliberations. Then maybe can we start on, we start right from the beginning, the long title. I think this document would need to be read with the summary of comments that we've used as basis for our discussions to date. The first one in the long title is to add in to facilitate and enhance an independent legal profession that reflects diversity and demographics of the Republic. I wonder if it shouldn't be with the demographics of the Republic. The request the department to give effect to last proposal in respect to the long title, but not to use the word strong legal profession as indicated in the summary document. So that is what that's about. I don't know, do you want me to continue until I'm asked to stop, Chair, or should I? Chair, the next one, when going through the bill, this is a departmental proposal, we talk about in the bill admission, enrollment and registration. And having a look at the Attorneys Act and the Admission of Advocates Act, the attorney, well let me start with the Admission Advocates Act. Section 3 says that the court must admit and authorize to be enrolled any person who qualifies. And the same, more or less, with the Attorneys Act. And my suggestion for consideration, or our suggestion, we discussed this, is that the council is going to do the registration or enrollment. What happens now is the courts do the enrollment, or the registrars of the courts do the enrollment, or the attorneys, because the Attorneys Act requires the role to be kept by the different registrars. So you've got roles in different high courts in the country for the attorney's profession. The role of advocates is kept by the Department of Justice, the Director General of Justice. This bill is changing that arrangement, and the role of all legal practitioners will be compiled and kept by the council. I would suggest that perhaps the terminology registration is not quite correct, and maybe we should think of using the word admission and enrollment. I have got a long footnote to that, but what I've just said now is going to put a footnote further into the bill, and I don't need to discuss that because there are quite a few provisions in the bill where there are consequential amendments to that concept if the committee agrees. Status of a lead practitioner enrollment. Chair, the next amendment is the committee asked us to consider change the name of the Bernie's Fidelity Fund to Legal Practitioners Fidelity Fund because advocates in certain circumstances are going to get fidelity funds. Can we go on to the... Chair, I put an apostrophe in and I've taken it out because in the term act I happen to notice that the apostrophe isn't in there. I would also have thought it would be an apostrophe. I think from a grammatical point of view, it is correct to have the apostrophe. And maybe we need committee guidance. I'm looking at section 25 of the Attorney's Act. And there it talks about the Fidelity Fund continues to exist under the name the Attorney's Fidelity Fund, and there's no apostrophe there. But I think strictly speaking there should be, so maybe I would appreciate the committee's views.
All right, let's put it in.
Thank you. And if we can move to the preamble, the third bullet, no, the second bullet, and bearing in mind that access to affordable legal services is not a reality for most South Africans, in some comments, footnote says the question was raised, what is affordable and affordable to who? And this is a consideration, this is a proposal for the consideration of the committee. The last bullet, bearing in mind that access to the legal profession is limited, I think access to legal services is already dealt with in bullet 2. That's also really just for the committee's consideration. Continue, and in order, the first bullet is to provide a legislative framework for transformation and restructuring of the legal profession into a unified profession which is representative of the public's demographics under a single regulatory body. Advocate Annalisa raised the question, and the committee asked us to have a look at this once. Is the bill about unifying profession, or is it about bringing about a unified or single regulatory body? This appears in the first portion of the bill as well. We were asked just to come up with an option, so that's it for the committee's consideration.
Yeah, this emanates from what I've described at the time as the brilliant discussion, which was led mostly by yourself, Mr. Dyer, and then the legal CEO, Lamisa, who I think gave us the breakthrough we needed. So wherever it appears, from here onwards, I agree absolutely that we now abandon the idea of the unified profession for which the case was never made, and substitute it with the unified regulatory body, whose composition, of course, we will discuss. One thing that just flags that again here, that we will have to find a way to deal with, is the idea of the demographic. In most places where it appears, the intention of the broad will do the trick, but not always. For example, here, I don't think it's enough to say which is broadly representative of the demographic. It's not in fact what we're trying to say. What we're trying to say is that any hurdles or obstacles to exist based on discrimination, factors, history, etc., mustn't be enough to continue. So I don't think we've quite got that. But as to the matter of the implications of that, it's solved in the system.
The last change on that page, and in order to ensure that legal services are accessible, there's a question raised about the wording of citizenry. I've already spoken to the word affordable, and that's therefore the latest consideration. Going on to the next page, the third last bullet, remove any barriers for entry into the legal profession. There was a comment and proposal that we insert any room. Unnecessary or artificial, we can use both or we could use one of those.
Yeah, I never like the word unnecessary because there are some areas that are necessary in a profession. You need to have complexity and qualifications in advance. So what is necessary, what is not, then involves decision about how to interpret necessary. So I think maybe artificial is a better one.
Well, if it's unnecessary, then it's unnecessary.
Yes.
Necessary is what will be in the act. Okay. Ah, please, lovely. Habits are hard.
I know.
I believe the index in that straight clause 1.
Okay, let's do that.
That's on page 7, if I page it with the same, clause 1 definitions. The first proposal is in respect of the definition of adequate. I think it was the LSSA proposed a definition along those lines, means a legal practitioner who is admitted and enrolled as such under this Act. The LSSA's definition did go further to say mean a legal practitioner who was or is admitted in terms of the Attorneys Act, but I don't think that is necessary, and I think the committee discussed that. It's been shortened to the way it reads there. And the same applies to the definition of advocate.
Can I myself look at this as the working proposition now? You know, all hell will break loose around the whole matter of professional, etc. So let's not preclude the possibility that we may come back to the definition of what advocate is. But for me, it works for now.
Chair, board, we don't need to discuss. Chair, the question, and we haven't, it isn't out of the board, although in square brackets, the question was raised. What we've tried to do in footnotes is just prompt the committee, where the committee indicated that it would like to revisit some of the issues, and one of the issues was the charter. So I don't know whether the committee wants to discuss it here or at a later stage.
I mean, as myself, I've expressed myself, I think, clearly when I said that over my dead body, there have been inclusions of reference to the charter. And that is still my view. I mean, it is quite simple. To all intents and purposes, the charter is a kind of, at most, a contract between the profession, the department, and others. And it has no basis in law whatsoever. Because all of those deals made between the government and industries and sectors. Have no basis. They didn't comply with any BE or other So it is essentially a contract between those parties, to the extent that stuff in the charter is reflected in the bill. It's fine, the bill deals with that. To the extent that there are things like the proposals in the charter, I just don't interest them. So, as far as I'm concerned, this is the law of the board, government position, and the charter, whatever deals have been made, have their place. Many of the provisions in the charter are dealt with in the law.
As an attorney in terms of the relevant transcribed legislation and physically practicing as such within the area of former Republic of Transcai on or before the date of commencement of Proclamation No. R 9/1997. I hope the change that I would propose would be a fair conveyance and means in respect of any legal registry a person practicing as such as contemplated in the legal practice law, so that the definition of conveyance and the deeds registry act would simply refer back to the definition of the person or the function of conveyance, say, in terms of legal practice act, legal practice law. Take out the definition of day, because that's dealt with in the interpretation act, and we've dealt with. The definition of High Court is a proposal from the Department. The quick note is to the effect that the Board does not, and was written at a time before the enactment of even though the Superior Court's Board is not yet enacted. This bill was written before the debate even started on the Superior Court's Board, and I think this bill should take into account the status of the Superior Court's Board and the Constitution 17th Amendment Act, which has now a High Court of South Africa, a Supreme Court of Appeal, and the Constitutional Court. So this bill sometimes refers to a High Court, which is the old concept, that High Court. The proposal here is that the High Court is using the bill means the High Court of South Africa established by Section 6 of the Superior Court Act, or if the context indicates otherwise, the division thereof having jurisdiction, because both concepts are used in the bill, individual High Courts, as well as the concept of the High Court generally. So that's the mathematical consideration. Yeah, I need to go through and submit it in role. Hello, this is a proposal from the department side. It's trying to simplify the definition of LB. There was a definition there. Means, but actually of laws, also referred to or known as a degree of baccalaureus legum, referred to in section 20. I don't know whether the committee wants me to deal with it now when we get to clause 26. The question was raised. The bill as it was introduced only seemed to talk to the 4-year LRB and didn't make provision for the undergraduate to be LRB. I think that's what we're doing. And what we tried to do in clause 26 is to cover that. I could deal with it when we get there. definition of mask. Notary is admitted enrolled rather than registered enrolled. Practical occasional training, that needs to be a typo. I just suggested that you add the word as. Interest account practice means practice conducted by A, one or more attorneys who are, or B, an advocate referred to in section 42D, who is, in terms of this act, required to hold a fidelity fund certificate. Chair, maybe it would be appropriate to have a look at section 42D now, because it comes up quite a bit during the course of the bill, that the committee understands what we've tried to do and is agreeing with our proposal. I think 42B, before deal, that's on page 30, deals with forms of legal practice, and chapter 2, read, and advocate may render legal services and expectation of a fee, etc., or any other applicable law, upon receipt of a brief from an attorney or upon receipt of a request only from a member of the public, provided that such request complies with the regulation of the Minister may make after consultation with the Council. The committee asked the department to prepare an option in terms of which applicants in certain circumstances can take briefs directly from the public. So 34.2 is now reading, an advocate may render legal services upon receipt of a request directly from a member of the public or from a justice center. A justice center is defining clause 1 as basically boils down to legal aid South Africa, for that service subject to paragraph B. Paragraph B provides that an advocate contemplated in paragraph A2, that an advocate doesn't take speech directly from the public, may only render those legal services, and this is a question that arose which we committee didn't discuss, may only render for those legal services rendered by advocates before the commencement of this act, as determined by the Council in the rules, if he or she is in possession of a fidelity fund certificate and conducts his or her practice in accordance with the relevant provisions of Chapter 7, and Chapter 7 deals with trust accounts, with particular reference to sections 84, 85, 86, and 87, and 84, 84 deals with the obligations of an attorney relating to handling the trust monies, and when I read obligations of legal practitioners relating to handling the trust monies, application for an issue of fidelity fund certificates, trust accounts, and accountant. So we refer to Chapter 7, but particular reference to trust accounts by legal practitioners. That applicant must also have complied with the regulations that the Minister must make in consultation with the Board, for the Council and the Board jointly. I wasn't too sure whether that should be the case. I put it into consideration relating to the existence of these directly from the member of the public and notified the Council thereof in terms of Section 31B2. Section 31B2 relates to the role of legal practitioners, and I have wondered whether an advocate is going to practice with Fidelity Fund certificates, this particular or those particulars on the role of legal practitioners to possibly reflect that situation.
That seems to make sense.
The alternative, so I had that was in there originally, then Legal Aid South Africa indicated that in practice they have a problem in criminal matters where they've asked for Legal Aid South Africa to be exempted from having their attorney to be an advocate in criminal matters. That reflects the current situation. Mm-hmm. And saying what presents a challenge is that the attorney that greets the advocate must be in court in criminal matters with the advocate that has been briefed. So actually 34B2 to a certain extent covers Legal Aid South Africa. In 34.2a, an advocate may render legal services upon receipt of a request directly from a member of the public order justice centre, which is legally in South Africa. But the alternative that's put in there, paragraph C, reads as follows: an advocate may render legal services and explication upon receipt of a request directly from a justice centre for that service, in which event provisions of paragraph B do not apply. So, Legal Aid South Africa might want to brief an advocate who keeps a referral practice. So, those are the two options that are available for the committee consideration. And my sense is that the Legal Aid South Africa would like to keep paragraph C so that they're not confined to briefing advocates who have fidelity fund certificates. Okay?
The requirements that the attorneys have to hover and act with their elbow at all times is one of the things that is questioned, isn't it? But that is probably, I'll discuss that more at some point, what are the rules, trial rules, what they ought to be, fixing, and it's the whole, that's why I want to discuss to what we actually can improve. But it's true that an attorney has to hover to decide on the
what I also put in, and this happened during the drafting process, particularly when you get to fund provisions, if I can just go back to the wording of paragraph 34.2b, an advocate contemplated in paragraph A2 may only render those legal services rendered by advocates before the commencement of this act as determined by the Council of the Rules. And I think it will become more apparent when we deal with the fund provision. If the intention of allowing advocates to accept briefs directly from the public, are they going to go into the realm of work that exclusively attends? I'm not talking about notaries and alliances, because that is restricted to attends. But when you get to the fund, it talks about reimbursement, or the fund is liable for theft of a legal practitioner or attorney legal practitioner as an executor of an estate or as a liquidator of an insolvent company. These are really legal services that are provided traditionally by attorneys. And my sense that I had to gauge the committee was that we're throwing it open for advocates to continue doing court work, advocacy work, and not necessarily take over everything that is done by attorneys. Because that will have a bearing on quite a few other provisions later on in board.
Thank you. May I be very clear on this, because I'm the one who argued after Judge Emmerin for a relaxation of the referral rule. When I do that, it's a huge victim of the petition. It's certainly not any of the questions of an attorney. But just to underscore the point, may I read one thing from Judge Emmerin's judgment in the press. It was a separate judgment written in support of Judge Yoshieva, but on narrow ground. And it's in that he made the point that you do not simply replicate antiquity for its own sake. You make adjustments, you make the point that the comparative jurisdictions have long made adjustments, and he's fine. In my view, the mere fact that the provision is divided into two in our country does not logically or necessarily entail the referral rule. Experience in those jurisdictions where specialist litigation practitioners have voluntarily organized themselves into bars without enforcing the referral rule against all other litigation specialists. So that is what certainly I have in mind, that you must have certain specialists sitting in bars on their own and not wanting to take referral from a gym. That's what I think. And there must be a way for us to say that, to narrow the thing down, presumably.
Chairperson, the current suggested correlation that the definition right before the commencement of the Act can cover the fact that it's restricted to the litigation court appearance. point that on the strength of saving will be covered in terms of groups. You've got various advocates groups that exist. And the specialists, you have the criminal bar, you have all of those sort of things. And what will all develop is exactly in line that you refer, without there having to be any necessity, in my opinion, to specifically put it in, because nothing precludes them, and they exist currently, so it will continue in that profession.
That's quite a big debate, because that crops up throughout the board, so that's okay. Can we move on to clause 2, the application of this act that really is at an equivalent to all legal practitioners. I think Legal Aid South Africa raised the question whether legal practitioners should be broadened to include candidates to legal practitioners. The department would suggest no, because a candidate legal practitioner is a legal practitioner in training,
yes.
and we wouldn't want to mix those up in the definitions. So address that where necessary in the bill, this act is applicable to all legal practitioners and all legal or candidate legal practitioners. Then we move on to clause 3. The proposal there is dealing with the purpose of the Act. And one of the purposes is to provide a legislative framework for transportation and restructuring of the profession that embraces the values underpinning the Constitution and ensures that the rule of law is upheld. This was suggested by the GCD, and I think it was asked to put an option in there. I think it's like said, it agreed tentatively by the the whole issue of the subject to stand over.
In clause 3A,
then the next change in clause 3B1, one of the purposes of the Act is to broaden access to justice by putting in place a structure to determine who is chargeable by legal practitioners for legal services really that are affordable and within the reach of the citizenry. The last bit of wording we've already dealt with in the preamble. This really relates to the department's proposal in clause 36. And if I may deal with it briefly, we're suggesting that to broaden justice by putting in place a mechanism to determine these chargeable by legal practitioners. The mechanism that we had in place, which we discussed more that we proposed for consideration, is in clause 35, and that proposal is related to the rules board, and perhaps can be doing it when we get into the interview.
Just allow me to say something. I have argued in favour of the fact that this law no longer deals with a matter of legal class. I keep thinking that there's something wrong with economics. Maybe the problem is, I don't know, even bigger. Maybe the problem lies elsewhere. The long and short of what I'm trying to say is that maybe we should be writing something else. Maybe we are creating a regulator. Maybe we should say to the regulator, go and conduct an inquiry into the economics of this sector, and then you will make your own rules. Maybe it's not as simple as fees. Maybe it is as simple as it. But there's something wrong with the economics. If we have so many small attorneys' firms, little-sized attorneys' firms, saying their work is shrinking, at the same time we have so many South Africans saying they don't have access to legal services, they can't afford it. Something is wrong with the supply and demand. Now, maybe that thing is the fees, and in the normal course would be the fees. But something is wrong, and it really needs a bigger inquiry. So I'm not proposing anything on this yet, but what I'm saying is perhaps for the purpose of that, I think we can, by the way, make a requirement of the new regulator to go and look at the matter and do something about it. What we need to achieve is we need to allow the market for legal services and the legal services to find each other. And whatever is, what, whatever is standing in the way, whatever is distorting or obstructing, is what's got to be removed. Because wherever there are markets, bring the services on a basis that they can fulfill the needs of those markets, the whole thing will work.
Well, in this case, I'm not sure that it is. Theoretically, yes.
Yeah. They're the markets, but they work to remove the distortions and the restrictions and the monopolies and the...
Okay.
That's the requirement.
I hope you know that, yeah.
So that's what I think we should maybe do more explicitly, but we should get the
regulations.
Yes, we need to bear that in mind, because it does,
yeah.
Yes. Yes, so we've just got it now. So. Mm. This one?
Yeah.
We'll make sure you get copies. All right, this is
the chair, and we move on to clause 3C, to the point of another purpose is to create a single unified statutory body, so there we already say a single statutory unified body, to regulate the affairs of all practitioners and all legal practitioners. We already dealt with that in the role of an accountable, efficient and independent legal profession rather than a unified profession.
Why are we still saying unified here in speech? Shouldn't I rather just say create a single statutory body?
No, unified is coming out. Oh, there, single unified. On the top of page 14.
Okay, 14, just that single line down. We still say single unified statutory body, should we not just say?
Well, that was the position, but it's still this thing that's unified.
Yeah, I know, but I mean,
we think
what you just
said. We don't need to say single unified, we need to say single statutory one. Which clause is that?
C.
Our pages aren't going
side and mine's
page 9.
Yeah, that bothers us. All right, but you see it on the G, and it's better.
Clause 3, the rest of the amendments there I've already dealt with. It's to encompass candidate legal practitioners. Then we move on to Chapter 2. Clause 4 also encompasses candidate legal practitioners. Clause 5 deals with the objects. Unified comes out. In sub-clause B, the object of the council. Object of the council are to ensure that these charged by legal practitioners for services rendered are reasonable and appropriate and promote access to legal services, thereby enhancing access to justice. So that's for the committee's consideration. In paragraph D, comes the candidate legal practitioners, as does paragraph G. Paragraph L, flagged at the charter. Let's move on then to, I'm just going to make sure that the most quick note is on this. Then go on to clause 6, which deals with powers and functions of the council. In respect of clause 6.1b, the council must do all that is necessary to achieve its objects. Among others, perform any act in respect of negotiable instruments or the electronic transfer of monies. The question was raised by UNISA whether we should not broaden that phrase, negotiable instruments or other electronic transfer monies, because that isn't the only type of transaction these days. The department suggests to perform any act in respect. Relating to its financial affairs as may be necessary. I put that in a square bracket. The state law advisors raised the question whether paragraph D is in fact necessary in the light of paragraphs R and T. The council may also do all things necessary for the proper and effective performance of its functions and the exercise of its powers, or do all things necessary for or conducive to the attainment of the objects of the council. I don't think it'll do any harm to have it in. Maybe the Lord might just want to come in here. Because we do have other financial related provisions here. In H, you can borrow or raise money. In G, in the S council, funds. I, you can insure against risk. So I don't think it would do any harm, but we'll try to hear from the Lord Houses. I think it was Ms.
I think it's we wouldn't do any harm to have it included in the easier for the state in our religion, but this financial asset has need to be preferred. But it will include negotiable instruments for electronic transfers of money, so that the committee may consider what should be included.
Sorry, there is a typo here. It should be performed any relating to its silent financial affairs as made necessary.
Rebecca, there are some aspects that are specified. These need to be a little bit concerned that that might be seen as a limitation. And I think it's far that the two have a general provision set upon if they can do what it is necessary regarding the mission.
So it stays in? Okay.
CK is including candidate legal practitioners in. Provide that the council may provide financial support to legal practitioners, organisations or institutions for the purposes of providing workplace training opportunities to candidate legal practitioners in deserving cases. New Deputy Minister, who is a member of this committee, indicated that somewhere in the bill, and I think was under the discussion of clause 6, that we must include the idea of making sure that pupils get some sort of remuneration when they do pupillage. We put it in here, but it might also be it could also be included in clause 27 or even in clause 94. Clause 27 deals with the requirements relating to practical vocational training, and clause 94 deals with regulations. We won't lose it if we don't flag it up because it has been flagged under those supervisions. So when we get there, and that the committee could guides the department where how it should be dealt with. There two other provisions where a similar proposal has been made.
I think what you said was that the government is provided for in the law. All we need to establish is where the stuff.
Can I just make a slightly broader point that I think we should check out all of these provisions that require or allow the board to dish out money. I mean, there's a problem with when the board is going to give its money to begin with. And while I'm on subject, may I say that we should have a costing done? Can we do that? A costing? We can't do this for us, standing aside here. Now, there's already going to be a problem that to finance the board, I tend to think that it's going to end up having to be from legal practitioners. They are already unhappy about that, obviously. We know that the Law Society of the Northern Provinces alone spent $60 million in their own operations. And all the separate law associations giving in excess of $100 million, plus NSSA and $100 million. But those are the orders of money that we're looking at. So I think in those circumstances, all of these provisions that say that the LPD must provide financial support in M, for example, to institutions providing education, in N, to legal practitioners, organizations, institutions, provided should come out. In O, provide financial support to non-profits should come out.
three grounds and countries already out. And so I think the stipends for the pupils certainly shouldn't be dealt with here, that should be in a practical vocational training. It's in itself to me quite a difficult issue. I mean, doesn't it transgress labour law that you have this form of unpaid labour going on in this country? Now secondly, the other side of the coin, are we in a position to legislate to a profession which is self-regulating? You must pay these people, you can't have... Because England, I want to address you separately on this whole thing. England, Wales, Oz, any other countries have done all sorts of things. Australia has upright and has co-regulated schemes. So, but it's quite impossible that whole question. I'm certainly in favour of people being paid, but just how properly to do it is the question. But in the meantime, here's the broader point. Should we take out one of these provisions to say that I know they've just enabled us, the board, to do this, but do they belong here at all? And then the small point underneath it all, which is requested.
I was understood at some stage there was a suggestion that some people would also contribute funds. And I think we need to include that in the footnotes as well. So that, and I think to agree with some suspect that we need to be guidance as to where those funds even come from. And I think it raises a broader issue that is, whilst we are legislating here, we do need the buy-in from the profession. Make this board work. I think that's a very important point. So in that vein, it's a slightly different point. We need to ensure that there is an ongoing engagement and feedback that we are getting already. I think the part that we're going to do is ensure that there is that talk. We, the final legislature, that are making the law. We're not advocating that. But just the buying as far as possible, I think is very important. And then also to emphasize that from some of the correspondence we've received that there's nothing final, there's no final decisions have been taken on anything. I think that's very important because the impression is created that the bill is almost final, and I think it's far from that. There are discussions, proposals and options that have been put forward, but a lot of issues still have to be flagged and stuff. But I think it's important.
One of the attorneys are following the process as any good South African does and using the opportunities for participation. I was struck in African Ishmael's letter by the fact that as part of the legal fraternity appears to have gleaned information from legal briefs. Where there was some increase in progress that we were progressing at pace. I mean, are they not following the process? We very handsomely invited them to continue to submit, as I think they have done. But oh yes, no, they are soon coming. More than that, we said in so many words this is a committee which invites experts to literally sit with us to say nothing and in turn some of us contribute. Instead of which they now spot the odd legal brief and come to leap to the conclusion that we are proceeding at pace. Were you referring to that? Yes.
Is that not the problem? I think in my response to Edgar Kaminia, which I will do, I must suggest to him that he make contact with the PhD. And he'll give a very accurate reflection.
Attorneys are all actually reading the homework and interacting with
the Mr. Schaefer and Mr. Sullivan.
Well, our message is a particular point that Steve has been said about it was in fact correctly proposed in legal brief that there was broad agreement between us that we were going to allow our briefing patents, and that was a major concern. The thing that I was struck by was the lack of.
Me too, struck.
let's put it this way. My inability to understand the senior counsel arguments of the correlation between the profession being separated and getting black
judges.
I don't quite
get that. And,
Anyway, my point to ask is, I don't have a problem with that, with the still enabling the council to do things. I do have a problem complaining to do things that have an actual implication, because I have been asking for months for costing implications to this entire council, and I do think it's relevant. And whatever you think about legal fees, it's a big per charge, maybe, but small per object. And to then, what they need to say to conduct a proper practice, a professional practice, is the sources and up to date trade law and whatever else they need to do. And then that is reality. And I don't think we can take it into it until we have the document, which I have been asking for, and I understand the department had or was going to give a short term. But I do think it's a real concern. I just think if we can enable, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I don't think we should also specify where the funding is going to come from necessarily as well, things like the CTOPs. But you did actually raise that as a possibility for the delay to contribute towards speech salary. And I'm slightly light on that, so I think we should look at minimum wages for entry to any work.
I thought the suggestion of seeing the kids who die, I thought it was an excellent one. And that would enhance the buy-in of this discussion. It's very interesting, but not all of it comes from the profession. A fair amount of it comes from businesses. I want us to stop the conflict now. There's a big interruption outside. Just one announcement, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Rano has wanted me to list 24 former Chief Justice Price Younger has passed on. Sad news. And we all certainly very, very disappointed. But as Parliament, we'll do the necessary appeal for Chief Justice.
I understand the content and the tone of the letter by Honourable Mayor, so that members would understand. I'm not being a devil's advocate.
Okay.
But the change of is the new chairperson of the General Council of Japan. At a time when the GCB appeared before us, he was not.
Where to deal with this issue of remuneration of candidate legal practitioners, article class or pupils. Is it in clause 6? Is it in clause 27, which is a very short clause? We've also put something in there, the request of, was it, the suggestion of Mr. Jeffrey, now Deputy Minister when he was last year. We must, the bill must do something about that aspect. So we've also raised it under clause 27 for the committee's consideration, as I said, in clause 94. Clause 27 is a short clause. This is just where we put it in here, but I think we do need to strengthen it. If we get to clause 27 and clause 94, this is just a suggestion that could be included here. But in clause 27 merely says that regulations must be made regarding practical vocational training. And that's a very important clause, because it's also left for the traditional council to have a look at. All the detailed provisions in the Attorneys Act relating to articles of class of practical vocational training are set out in reasonable detail. We haven't been able to do that in this bill because we don't only have to regulate articles of clerkship, which could be easier because we have a basis, a statutory basis from which to work. But the whole question of pupillage and how that is going to pan out is something that the department has not been able to engage with the legal profession. That's one of the aspects that's going to speak of. So coming back to clause 27, all these details about practical vocational training, and particularly probably pupillage, needs to be spelled out in regulations. So what we've done, and this is the suggestion I got from my colleague, Mr. Spassan, who unfortunately couldn't be here today, and by the way, I apologize, is we must include, or we must consider including, a mechanism to deal with these issues, and that will probably be dealt with by way of regulations, but the committee might want to have something specific about stipends or remuneration, or a clause similar to the section that I just read in the Attorneys Act, where minimum amounts payable to candidate legal practitioners needs to be put in, so that that isn't lost when the regulations are eventually written. I hope I made sense on that aspect.
So then why don't we do in 27, the council must, in the rules, determine minimum conditions, procedures, and remuneration or payment for them, add to the discretion and administration. Add
the 27 does say no. The council must, in the rules, determine the minimum conditions and procedures for the registration and administration of practical vocational training. And then the proposal is, it's underlined, including a mechanism to deal with the payment of stipends or allowances.
But what I'm saying is, why don't we say that there is no doubt?
That is a possibility.
So what
this
means?
Then use the wording of the Attorneys Act. Let's fix the minimum
I think it might be a little bit too bad. Yes. And that's where the CETA would also come in. Yes.
Shopper Scholar and then Mrs.
Schaefer. No, I just wanted to mention, here you mentioning articles of flagship and people and one in the thinking of
if you're going to practice as an attorney, you do, and that's written in the law already, you do 2 years of articles of clerkship for practical vocational training, and the focus there is on attorney's work, which is not the focus, and I haven't done articles of clerkship, maybe my colleague can help, but I think the focus there is on, let's say, more administrative type law type issues. But you do other general stuff, but when you do pupillage, the focus is on advocacy and court work.
Maybe Mrs. Shepherd, you should simply explain to us
what it's about. Explain exactly what it's about everything. It's about high court work, about magistrate's court work, about comes without running past the comments about commercial words, about ethics, about, and it's across the board. So it's far more comprehensive than an advocate journey. I'm going to suggest that we take, I mean, that in, so we actually just take that out there. It doesn't really fit, because we're not saying that the purpose of that provision is not to provide for the payment really, it's to provide for assistance to provide workplace training opportunities, and then tagging that onto the end then creates the confusion regarding payment of the actual stuff. And so I would rather take that out there and clarify better in 2017.
Okay, that's actually, with the proviso that further clarity that's found in the agenda.
Something Mr. Lyle brought to my attention outside during the break. I hadn't even realised in the case of responses, M. Infinelli and O'Connor, that these are in fact perimetry. Because, you know, we had just raised the question of whether they will have any money, enough money anyway, without dishing out this to all and sundry. Now, he brought to my attention that these are all things the council must do.
No,
where's the May? We should change it.
May.
All right, but then split them out so that it's quite clear which ones are fair and true and which ones are not.
It's all May.
Oh, it's a diet. It's not fair. I was surprised.
Would you rather be must?
No.
All right. So we'll stick it in 27.
The questions about some of those provisions, like M, is there any guidance there for providing financial support and support to organizations or institutions or those?
That seems to be okay. Seems to be okay.
Now, Mr. Dyer, further, would you like to speak to this if you get some good thinking in respect of the availability of funds, for example?
This is not in relation to which.
No, we're dealing with
engineering
as well too.
Okay.
These provisions under 6.1, it must do all of this, and it may, having regard to the Constitution. I wonder whether we shouldn't just add in unavailable financial resources as a general caveat, because then is one of the issues that changes the whole funding issue on the fund that made detailed admissions on concerns on available resources, and if we do consider bringing that subject to the available financial resources, would that then make it clear that we can do all of these things, especially on the financial aspects, but of course it's not related, if you stick it in right at the top. Subject to financial resources doesn't blend with a lot of things that it can do, and if we split this paragraph into two sections and deal with those that are strictly regulatory, and then there is a second category of obligations that it can consider relating to donations, grants, and the like, we can actually pick these out. Say that in these instances, subject to the available financial resources, the council may. Because then it kind of separates the strict regulatory function and then the other add-ons that are not strictly regulatory, are nice to have.
Okay.
And that's something that we could quite easily do.
All right. Mrs. Schaefer?
I don't think it's May, it's a case that shouldn't argue to say anything extra, because if it is May, so it's not compelling them to do anything. So obviously it will be within the financial constraints. But maybe what we need to consider is whether there are some things that we feel that they must do within the available resources. And then we could add something to available resources. because this, otherwise they can say, well, we maybe don't have to, the there may be something that we feel should be done. And maybe we need to just have another look through all of these sub-stores and things and have it and
some other things that come up.
Yeah.
And while some of that, tomorrow Mr. Dyer, we're going to have the algae bank in the kitchen. Mr. Dyer will give us a presentation on us. It's a PowerPoint presentation.
I confirm that I spoke to you during the break, is that I'll do that.
Yes.
It's just the existing costing, and then I can just take a look at that.
Oh, don't worry.
Okay. The page, church.
I know the feeling with that.
Okay.
Accept my suggestion that we take up that inbox about including the pamphlet stipend. And that we maybe consider C point about the in deserving cases, because that's not really an attitude to put in deserving cases. I mean, there should be ongoing support for workplace training in any case, mm-hmm. even ongoing training.
Yeah, I thought I've already got square brackets about taking out. I thought it was suggested that the department takes out including the payment stipends to pupils and put it in clause 27. Yeah, and then the other suggestion now in deserving cases to possibly take that out. I think it broadens the.
In deserving cases comes out altogether, and the question of stipends goes to clause 27.
Just for clarity, what we're saying is that there has to be a mechanism with regard to setting minimum remuneration for necessary pupils, but potentially defectious. I think that's what you're going to 27. It must come across this. An alternative legal practitioner in his definition is pupils and candidate attorneys.
Why are we restricted to pupils? The department was requested to put in pupils because of the cost of medicine and service. If there is a provision in the Attorneys Act prescribing minimum remuneration payable to candidate attorneys, then we can just as well open it up to candidate attorneys and pupils in clause 27. I don't think it will preserve the balance. Sure. Just put it something that's yeah. already in the Attorney Act.
Okay. Look at that.
I mean, it's still very different.
No, we understand that. I'm not suggesting that put them together.
No, we just need maybe to have someone who's done that other than the CD or independent advocates or both. Because who's going to then pay that remuneration? The individual aspect. So what's the effect going to be? They're going to say, well, I couldn't take my people.
Is that a possibility that there was to discuss CETA could do it? Could be, I don't know whether the council would be in a position to do it. And these are all things that are going to have to be set out in the regulations and discussed in the transitional council as well. These are the hard issues that the department couldn't give concrete provisions because of all the uncertainties and trying to make progress on important issues like that, and that's why the bill looks like it does, with some of these issues are there for the transitional council.
And in the meantime, we're going to have a provision that says there's going to be minimum wage for pupils, and it's going to have to come into effect when the ball comes into effect. Without any framework for it being agreed to, without any guidelines to what this amount is going to be, people aren't going to want to take it on. And I'm concerned that we're going to end up having the opposite of what our intended objective is, by putting people off taking on people instead of the other way around.
Okay.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. The problem is, as Mr. Bassett is trying to explain, this is one of the many things that they couldn't get agreement on, or even consensus. And so the idea then is to allow the transitional council to take this as well as other matters forward, so that it's then discussed in the transitional council. The whole idea of the three terms and everything else being discussed today. Whereas if we...
You're going to have an obligation in the back, so then you maybe suspend the completion of that section as well, the finalisation of the issue by the
Commission. That sounds great, and one can, depending on the degree of the hard issues, one can have an incremental implementation of some section or legislation where you say that this will, this provision will only kick in. So it's just a suggestion. Once that process has been decided upon, and that must be decided upon, the lifespan of the transitional council is only 2 years, and that would give them an understanding that they have to do it because it's going to kick in at the date when the transitional council ceases to exist. So that's a possibility to put in the back of our mind. I don't know how workable it is, but it's something we can think about.
The challenge that we have is with regards to the article of partnership, which is as well structured in terms of how many weeks they would need to work through the procedure. And all of those things are done within the confines of the current regulatory structure, which is the Commission of Societies. But with regard to pupillage, it's been done under the auspices of the Voluntary Association. And I would have thought that going further, not at all, would be to regulate that aspect of pupillage and give it the substance that it deserves, so that this clarity with regard to what is privilege, similarly to vocational training, was clearly defined. Because the purpose, surely, is to regulate everything about alternative legal practitioners and legal practitioners. And it's an aspect that kind of is on the side, because let's also be mindful that once the board is in, pupils need to be trained. And the notion that they're going to be continued to be trained by a voluntary organization is something that I think we should not assume that that is the correct way to do it, and that it should be housed within the National Legal Practice Council. And I think we just need to look at that a bit more. Yes, sir.
It's not possible to get things must be done by the regular rules by the singular. No letter of ministerial regulation for a particular case and we have been any of those social problems from the world. The thing is the regulator, it's a rule making by the particular type of rule, and that will also render its consequences as possible with the self-government.
Except that the concern that's been expressed is if a particular advocate chooses to have to take all of you, then he or she can do so. And some of us are saying, no, there should be clear regulation as far as that's concerned. But right now, they say to us, we will say, is that appropriate? Other people who have gone through that particular route speak this item is about it. I didn't go down that road, so I can't speak about it. But I can well imagine that it would be tough if you're struggling from a far little town into the city if you need someone to take you out of people. Sorry ma'am, I agree.
It's currently Rules 97 that deals with the terms of reference of the PC does not include this aspect.
It deals with all the practical vocational training requirements, and I think maybe that could be warned or could add something in specifically. that the TT must have a look at those issues, and then somehow what is resolved there, we must find a way that that continues once the main body of the board comes into operation.
In the attorney's profession, there is no legal obligation for a practicing attorney from taking on a cannabis legal practitioner, cannabis article cross. There is no legal obligation. Of course, it's a great moral obligation to do so, because the attorney had to go and feed himself with herself before they admitted. And of course, within the attorney's profession, there is a great need for everyone to be articled, and we know that article clerks really struggle to get articles, and there are various ways in which that process is being assisted. The justice centers, the increased numbers that they use, clinics, and also the state is able to articles as well. The argument of not regulating the issue of pupillage falls short for the reason that in the attorney profession, although it exists and there's talk about vocational training, there's no legal obligation that every attorney has to article, has to take on the kind of attorney. So I think it's exactly the same point when we were going through it, it will be to look at the way in which the TC deals with vocational training across the board for pupils as well as for candidates and terms. And regulate this whole process, because it must be able, there has to be a course that is worked out, approved by, you know, support credits, all of those things that currently is being done by law societies. So there's clarity. And of course service providers can then provide it. If you look at trial advocacy that has been done as part of the attorney's profession, it's the advocates that are actually lecturing at the law schools on trial advocacy. And that's what happens practically. So I don't think it's a really big benchmark in terms of having to regulate and to discuss it within that process of regulating privilege. And I don't think you should think that it's something that is so not possible to regulate.
Where you said about attorneys not being obliged to take article class, that argument doesn't apply to advocates because of the provision of the Act. Could you just repeat that? People don't understand it. But you are saying in the bill that there will be some form of payments and that type of thing. If you're not placing an obligation in the bill upon attorneys to take class, clearly that's my reading of the bill as well. Therefore, the similar provisions also obviously apply to advocates, and far more so because they are single practitioners. Well, I know that the most single attorneys are not state candidate attorneys, very few. But if I may complete, I think that so the point is, and I think the chef also said that we can't be expected to advocates to compel advocates to take on pupils. But how we regulate the process and how far the regulation goes when it comes to payments, and I think we all agree that there should be some starting point. It would appear that is there, and the whole aspect of the regulation of pupils is not dealt with before. And whether we should go into that terrain, we would then have to engage very closely with the Bar Council. That's a whole new area. and it would impact upon the binding of the legal profession should we go into that area at all. So I'd be very hesitant. I know we've already set a major step has been the payment of license defense. But to start getting into that whole area, I think we need to be careful before we go to that area. That might sort of delay the whole process of finalizing the bond. But I'm not saying opposed to the looking at that. That's it.
Raising these are the things that
the EDC is going to have to sit down and say, how do we cater broadening the scope where people can do articles, where people can do pupillage, that we don't want to throw everything out that in terms of pupillage that's there now, but see how more people can be accepted into the profession. And I would like to come back to you specifically on SAT advocates, because in terms of the bill, I just want to go and have a look at the National Prosecuting Authority Act to see how it correlates as far as that's concerned. But the way the bill reads now, an advocate must do pupillage, and your SAT advocates don't necessarily do pupillage now. They are dealt with in terms of the way all people that have LLBs they can apply, after getting their LLB, they can apply to the High Court and become advocates. So we need to factor that into this bill as well. But I will come back to the committee on that. So that's the difference between the advocates and the attorneys that's been discussed quite a bit in this committee. Attorneys have to do articles of clerkship before they can go to court to apply. Advocates can get their LLB and go and be admitted as advocates. And this bill is stopping that process. Whether you want to be an advocate or an attorney, you must do pupillage or articles of clerkship. My suggestion would be that we have a good look at Clause 97, try to strengthen that in our provisions, try and incorporate the discussion we had here today. And then the question, I think that's what Mr. Swart raised, is how does that regime then fit into the, continue to apply in the bill? What's the rest of the bill, what the provisional council is phased out. The regulation that are made there in terms of pupillage must continue once the rest of the bill comes into operation.
I mean, at the moment, do you have a status or fire with the independent end of the table? Because, I mean, obviously then they wouldn't have to investigate to their part of the independent, you know.
Said, I remember from the submission, they also have a training process that the correspondence, so whilst the people is under training, he does written submissions, as I understand it, also to mentor, and but he can then proceed with earning a salary because he works. It's not a full-time year as the bar council does. It's just a different form of training, as there is no prescription.
Yes, that
is.
When I say we must broaden and have a look at other avenues, and this law is just not, that's the sort of thing, these are the discussions that need to take place, and these are the discussions that haven't taken place. And we've got to have a look what is there when it gets to the transitional council, and to see what can be done to stand and open up
and
standardize, yes, or come up with alternatives. If you don't do conventional pupillage, then you can do it through correspondence, if that is at all possible. I'm not saying that's possible.
I'm trying to understand how you would do that. Pupillage by correspondence? Is that? I don't know. It doesn't sound feasible to me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is.
Yes, I understand it. Even the Bar Council pupillage, it's basically a study year that people have. And he can appear in things, but he also does research and things for his mentor. Yeah, that's the same kind of. I'm certainly unafraid. And I think it might differ also from Bar to Bar.
Sure.
But for the attorney's act, so I think, the big equalizing factor is that admission exam. I mean, irrespective of the quality of your articleship, I mean, that also differs. The exposure you get at the firm you are. So, if advocates also have to write an examination as the attorney's, I mean, that is equalizing. But if you didn't have any exposure to some form or some area of law you have to study. You study it as an auditor and before the exam, because the exam is divided in different sessions. So I think that that might also be helpful. Yes, but again, it's only the bar mirrors, or the pupils at the bar for the entire exam. There's no other, I think the independent EALTA also has some kind of examination, but they don't deserve anything. So it just doesn't know what's in front of him.
I just want to make a point about 97.1.5. And I think that clear intention of the bill has been to deal with practical vocational training for pupils. It's clearly there, and the point that we are discussing about this whole aspect is really something that the regulatory authority must be seized with. And I think we have to be clear about that. And the TC has got the obligation to deal conclusively with it, because the intention of the bill is to regulate pupillage within the confines of the council. And we just need to be comfortable with the fact that our concerns are actually captured as one of the key issues that must be concluded by the TC. Register, enroll admission. I'm not going to go into that.
And that was instructions. These are clause 4, tells them that make rules relating to annual fees payable to the council by attorneys. Fidelity funds are different now because fidelity funds tickets are basically given to advertisers. We have a practitioner and that is the provider, provided that any determination made in terms of the paragraph calculation consultation is performed. That was a request by the fund that when determinations are made for payment of fidelity fund fees, both the council and the fund that is involved in that determination. The council may determine any other fee or charge it considers necessary. This was a proposal that was agreed to by the committee to add the word as contemplated in this tax. So they support that. Then we go to sub-clause 5, in terms of paragraph F, the council must, and this relates to education in law and legal practice generally, must in the prescribed manner create an innovative to provide proper appropriate transformational legal education. A lot of questions around the meaning of that, and suggested provisionally or temporarily that that wording be part. The amendment in sub-clause 5H, again related to admission and enrollment, extension amendment. And that brings us to the end of the powers of that long provision clause 6 dealing with powers and functions of council. And here we get to the composition of council. My footnote here says, you see, Plan Clause 7. Should I read my footnotes, Chair? You don't have
one. Okay.
You see, Plan Clause 7 in its entirety and comments thereon, but did make some preliminary proposals for the department to work on. For consideration as reflected in the clause. So the clause has been in flag, but we were required, we were requested to do some amendments. The council consists of 16 practitioners determined by the council or described by the minister in terms of section 97(1)(a) or in terms of this section in consultation with the council if the procedure referred to in subparagraph 1 requires revision at any time after the commencement of chapter 2. I can just explain that Chair 97 is the one clause that we just discussed. It sets up the terms of reference of the PC in terms of which the minister must eventually make regulations. One of the issues that the minister must make regulations on is the election procedure for the for the first council. The question arose, and this is, and I hope flak be taken here. This is a proposal that I have in my own personally. The PC must make regulations for the election of the first council when council is going to be elected. If the PC and those regulations are made, shouldn't those regulations continue to apply once the body of the Mine Act comes into operation? That they can continue if everybody's happy with those, then only when those regulations made by the PC require amendment for some or other reason at a later stage, that they can be amended or reviewed by new regulations in terms of 471A2. The idea is why, for that whole reason, now the teaching notes or the regulations are made for an election procedure. The first council comes in, and then the first council, as I read before, must then go and make a new election procedure. If the election procedure made by the TC working, why change? But create the opportunity for the council to change the personal name act comes into operation.
If the council deems it necessary.
If the council deems it necessary.
That makes sense to me. Honourable members?
It's going to be a long and hard fight, so I'm sure it's easy to get something up and running.
Mm.
And if it is up and running, why do it again if it's not necessary, if it's working? But that is really a proposal from my side. I don't want to ask for the village.
No,
I
think you can't do that.
So that's what that is about.
This is so far.
And I've been looking now why we are saying that the minister must describe the procedure. I mean, what procedure? Are we saying that must be elected by an individual body? I mean, what procedure can be described?
As started in 1996, that is pretty straightforward. It's the nomination, designations for the different formations in the legal profession are. One of the mandates in terms of reference of the PC is to come up with an election procedure for the first consul after the PC comes from it. So the first consul will be elected in terms of the procedure that was negotiated by TC. The way the bill reads now, the council must be elected in accordance with the procedure determined by council in the rules. So you're going to go back to the drawing board, the new council is going to have to, when it wants to change, when the council determine the office of that council, the first council comes to an end, they will have to come up with a new election procedure. And if that is a proposal that I'm making with forward. Because the first election procedure is done by way of regulations.
So you're going to
describe, and then say that you're going to that is still one of the issues that the committee has to discuss, how the regulations are made in or after consultation.
Yes, Laura?
Can I just latch onto what Robert Shanda said? I think I agree to a certain extent with her that would there really be a procedure for consular council? Because everybody that's stipulated here, I think is that what you're referring to. And yes, I understand what you're saying. Is it really necessary to prescribe a procedure for consular council's election?
So,
I think all of those are not. Because in terms of the bill, as you chaps have also inherited this bill after so many years, there is already a provision saying how the final LPP will be composed. I happen to disagree with that. It's already there. And the majority of the components elect from their own members. So all a load of nonsense. And I mean, I will make some remarks about that. The so-called transitional board tomorrow when I address you on the opposition of the permanent board. But this is equal, I'm not just nonsense. I think you've inherited it and I think it's nonsense.
There's a me, although it's not saying that the GC is going to deal with the procedure and that procedure is going to follow through. Is that what she is saying?
No, I think I'm going to tell you that you shouldn't have a deal with the and then I think we should deal with the political and other real factors why and pro-composition. I mean, so what you need to write in the book. But what you see, what you really need to look at, really, why was the thing created? And why must this TLC just have a thousand functions in the regional samples? I mean, we're the legislators, and we're creating a thing here, a regulator, a legal practice, and it's a regional emanation. How can we do that? We've decided what it is the regional councils will be doing and what their, because their composition must follow from the LPP. And how can we write a thing and then say no, that the professionals must now go and decide what is the powers and functions of the regional councils?
you know, so why are we better with the regional consultants like that? So I think it's very, I think it's all very problematic. And I mean, there must be some answer to why is it that the GLC must put in that all the practical vocational training requirements? I get an answer. Is it that it's so urgent? Yes, it's urgent. Some things are demonstrably amiss and need to be dealt with. Right. So, but then you might as well create the LPG now and tell them to start doing the necessary, which is the practical, this is that, doesn't like that. The practical, with such legislative provisions as we feel persuaded we absolutely have to put in law. And, you know, where necessary, we must take the responsibility as much as possible. We must leave the new regulator to regulate. But if we feel it's a matter of importance to South Africa, that we decide what the framework for practical vocational requirements must be, then put it in law. Or give the LDB the first duty to elaborate upon it. But why do you have to create this whole thing whose main purpose in life is otherwise simply to cook up an election procedure for a thing whose composition is already determined in this world? And to think up what the power and functions of the regional councils must be when surely somebody must have some, you know, advance. And so they must cook up a mechanism to wind itself up. Look, I mean, it's true function was probably the thing that we have now already agreed with. Throughout. Surely its true function was to disestablish and shut down the parent organisation. No, We've already accepted we can't touch the boundaries. The DCP. Neither do we wish to. The DCP remains, the constituent bond councils remain, the voluntary associations. The one big difference is this, and the one real achievement of this law will be that you separate the regulatory from the functions, because you cannot have bodies of professionals which exist in order to look after their own interests also doing the regulation. That's where their whole principled argument of self-regulation falls flat on its face. You cannot look after your own interests and regulation is something that occurs in the public interest. Representation is something you do quite legitimately for your own interests, but you cannot regulate without doing so in the public interest and for all of South Africa. And that's the great virtue of voluntaries will continue to exist, but their function will be representative. The LPB, in whatever form it takes, will be the regulator. It's in my view that it will still consist of the advocates separately and the attorneys separately in two chambers. So they must do regulation, and that is in the public interest. So, all right, so you're telling me that will not give hypothesis, all right, maybe they're granting this TLC so that they can shut down everybody else. You say that's not the case. I said you say that. Right, so we're not shutting down the voluntaries, we won't. We're holding up that whole floor. As for the LSSA and all the attorneys, presently the four provincial attorneys organizations and the others, why don't you address us on those? They will they, it depends on them, but they are statutory bodies, they therefore will automatically become part of that. Mm-hmm. You know, what you have to address us on that. What's going to happen to the LSA? And we'll bring my back. And also society is both on fault.
Chair, the SSA is a voluntary association. Provincial Law Society are statutory. And so the bill talks only to the statutory law societies, and they have been part of the council. But I think just very briefly to respond to Arnold with regards to DC, it's a total compromise. And in an ideal situation, if during the last 2 years the legal profession had been capable of resolving differences that I don't really understand what the real differences are, then there would be absolutely no reason for the state, by its own fiscus, to fund the process to assist the legal profession to come together. But for that, the hard issues have been contained in the transitional Central Council, and perhaps when we come to that, we should change the name to committee, to a transitional committee. Because in some way, it might be embedded in our minds that this is a council, or really it's a committee. It's a convergence of interests, including voluntary associations, to make certain that those hard issues that have been kicked for touch is dealt with, so that when the council comes into operation, there's not outstanding issues that haven't been dealt with. So I think broadly, that's the reason why the transitional committee is going to exist, because the profession has just not been able to deal with all of these issues.
Okay,
the whole issue of the regional council is a hard issue. The issue of what the function of the council are going to be, the whole issue of rules and regulations and procedures, the vocation of any, and now we've picked up the whole issue of privilege that is contained in there, but it needs to be unpacked. The funding process is something that one needs to understand, and depending on how the regional councils are going to be structured, what sort of delegated authority vests there, so impacting the entire funding model. So those are just issues with regards to why the interim phase must happen. In the competition, there was a big fight about the issue of the initial draft of the bill having too many minister-nominated persons. And members will know it's been watered down to three. So,
thanks. I think we've come up with a new meaningful TC now, total compliment. But I kind of answering my own question, sort of, but I mean, the point I've just realized now is that I'm assuming that the election thing, not the other members that are designated by the body, sure. So I assume that the reason that is because we don't yet have one unified body of attorneys and advocates at all. But I'm not sure that procedure is the right word. I mean, I don't know why the decision be prescribing procedure. Maybe we look at the terms of our formula, agreement about transitional council, something like that. But I think if we can flag that for now and see if we can work better, because I'm not happy with the minister describing what procedure against this volunteering is necessary. I mean, there needs to be some agreement as to how advocates from which body, maybe. But I don't know about the procedure for electing them. They elect them from their own ranks.
Yeah, there seems to be a problem with the government. Even though they say, how the council will be composed, the legal practitioners, blah, 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 and so on. And then at the same time, say, the transitional council must make it on the election procedure.
Well, but you've already said, yes.
How many are going to come from the GCP and how many are going to come from the independent? I think that's what it is. All right, well, if that's what is being meant, if that's what's meant, then yeah, we need to just get that in mind. It's somewhat vague, right? But I see now what Debbie said. Yeah, it's this way. You're okay.
Okay, but
I think some of the things that I wanted to say have been responded to really. Yes, the election procedure is only for the legal practitioners, and you can just put yourself in their place, particularly for the first round. It's going to be very sensitive and difficult. And so I think some sort of procedure, we can have a look at the wedding, and my memory serves me correctly, I can't find it quickly, but I think in terms of the current dispensation, as far as attorneys are concerned, in any event there's an election procedure for the election of the members of the council, and that is described by the rules made under the thing that the committee wants me to apply letters, but that's what I recall. On the transitional council that Mr. Dyson already spoke about, he suggested a name change, and it really, the transitional council is as a result of the history of the board. It's taken a long time to get here, and particularly because of the differences of opinion between the various formations in the legal profession. And the forgive me if I'm saying things that have been said right at the beginning when we started with this book last year, is Minister de la Oma at that time asked the profession to come up with a consensus for that could be enacted, and we are still waiting for that consensus for, and the approach that has been taken by government, the department, the ministers over the years is not to be seen. We are being very careful not to interfere with the independence of the legal profession. We've got a stage where we have to move forward, and that's where the TC comes in, and possibly the TC, the Transitional Council, is the wrong name. That is there to the consultative forum to clarify and address the core issues that are remaining, and the core issues are what has been thought about over the years. Who will do what? What are the regulatory bodies look like? How will they be composed? Will they be one? Will they be two? How do advocates and attorneys eye to eye, and how are they going to deal with all these issues? What are the powers of the regional council, which is the diocese? These are the, so the terms of reference aren't very large. There are very few things there. But those are the core things over which there have been engagement after engagement after engagement for many, many years, and we didn't know it. So, you know, if we're looking for a new name for TC, it's a consultative forum to prepare what's going to be there at the end of the day. This TC, during the operation of the TC, your existing bodies are going to stay in place until the new book in its entirety comes into operation. But the bill makes provision for the voluntary association to continue in operation if they so wish. But it's also, and when we get to that provision, we were requested to do an amendment to allow the voluntary association, if they should wish to dissolve and to come, to bring their assets over to this new statutory structure, then they can do so. So then, if LSSA is not going to, if it doesn't want to dissolve, it can stay where it is. The GCP and all the constituent bars can stay where they are. But the intention is to try and address a very sensible issue that has come a very long way. Departments and the ministers that have been and are there now realize that to try and impose something is not ideal. So let the profession, through the TC, try and address those major issues that we haven't been able to address.
Just 2 points. Firstly, the fact that the Law Society is on record as having formally requested that its staff and personnel be taken or transferred to the New York. So that's a matter of... Yes, it's a matter of record. Secondly, we need to remind ourselves that we had a George Bezos who appeared before us in 1975, where he said to the profession, he pleaded with both the attorneys and the advocates to check together. And now, the promise we made is coming true. He said to me, if you don't do it, other people will do it for you.
But regarding the funding model as an issue to be dealt with by the Transitional Council, I don't think as a parliament, a responsible parliament, we can pass a bill without knowing the financial secrets.
Okay, we're on clause 7. We've dealt with that. I'll try and get the election procedures that are, maybe we'll think about the wording there as well in line of discussions here. We were also requested to put in an option. The question was raised whether there should be two teachers of law in the composition of the council rather than one. And we were requested to name the body, the umbrella body of teachers of law. We've done. Our proposal reads, consists of, besides the legal practitioners, two teachers of law designated by the South African Law Deans Association. The South African Law Deans Association has statutory recognition in the sense that it appears in the SJA Act, South African Judicial Education Institute Act. I saw her incidentally yesterday, and I didn't have time to take it any further. There's been a proposal that the reference to the South African Law Deans Association should be changed to Society of Law Teachers of South Africa. I'm not sure what the status of that is, but we were requested to name the actual association that has been done in the provision. And then you will see that we have taken out the word nomination and replaced it with designation. So it's two teachers of law, not nominated, but designated. Subject to subsection 4.3, fit and proper persons appointed, we've changed it to designated. And again, one person designated by Legal Aid South Africa and one person designated by the board, the attorney. Fidelity's Fund board, who may not be a legal practitioner, I think that's what the committee asked us to do, and we did the same when we adopted the provisions of the board of the Fidelity Fund, that they must also have the council must also be represented on the fund. The question was raised. But if you take a magistrate's commission, which is a large body, there's one teacher on there. And we haven't even had a professor there, and the magistrate's commission meeting. This one is a heavy duty on the Deans Association to release a person. So I don't want to go back on argument.
No, it's an option.
But it's an option.
You're
something to say, you know, have they been consulted? You know, one teacher of law who represents the Deans Association should surely be sufficient to present the arguments of the association. We've got to be careful of it becoming so large. Maybe it's something we can just look at when we look at the final composition.
There wasn't debate on that. The question is merely raised. This is what it was.
The insertion of the designation by the board.
Yes.
The number is an even number, and it must be considered whether it's not better to get into an unknown
number.
Okay. Also, again, also that the law teachers are going to have a critical role in, you know, liaising with practitioners to ensure that the curriculum is in line with what they need and so on and so forth. And I do think there is some areas in having more engineers from the law teachers.
I think what we should consider possibly is you have one law teacher, because the law teachers have their own association, and then you have the South African Law Deans Association. So those are the deans of all the universities, so they're operating on that level. And if we separate that, then we have law teachers, so a pure law teacher, those teachers of students, and can make input on that, and then the law deans in terms of curriculum. So if we separate that, then perhaps that might be better.
Honourable members, Brock,
and then Mr. Strock.
Chair, I would support that. It's now because he is a person who is entitled to the offer country. So he does more administration and improving the curriculum. Law teachers need to teach. I think it's a good point.
We will have a discussion about the whole composition of both the constitutional council and the council. But I do want to just raise the issue about the equity of numbers between the attorneys and the advocates. We need to look at that as well. I appreciate the fact that on both sides, and I'd like to also just hear the arguments as to how we got to those figures. And would it not be a way of getting buy-in from the advocates' profession if their numbers were also increased, considering that what their numbers in general might not be the same, but we want buy-in, and secondly, this both constitutional council and the final council will determine the future of both professions.
So it's something that we need to consider as to whether we should. The advocates argue for equity. I don't necessarily say equity, but to increase the number of advocates on the council. And maybe I can just hear how those figures were arrived at for both the transitional council and the final council. And again, regrettably, there wasn't consensus reached, so we've got to take that decision. But I just want to
understand.
Yeah, thank you.
And of course, you know, the profession weren't open with us as regard those issues. They didn't agree on it, they didn't. They just came and made their submissions and presentations, and that was it. So, you know, that really helped.
Chair, the figures arrived at were a reflection of the current numbers. And in terms of the holistic number that were allocated in the bill, and when those negotiations happened, there was an initial number given for legal petitions, and then there were discussions between the advocates and the attorneys. There was no consensus, but from the point of the attorney's position, the rationale was that the overwhelming majority of legal petitioners in every case. That was the reason for them having the increased number in terms of the council. But it was, I suppose, an issue that we have not resolved. But it relates squarely to the existing numbers, 25,000 to 6,000.
Proportion. Address you on the change of wording from nominated to designated. The committee requested us to have admit that. Here, I think there was, by using the word nominate, there is still another functionary involved to actually do the appointment. So we have a look at section 178 of the Constitution, where the Judicial Service Commission is constituted, where you have a designation at the end of the road, where you have a nomination. I can read from section 178, two practicing advocates nominated from within the profession and appointed by the president. So we were requested, I got the sense that we were requested to try and allay any concern with the use of the word nomination, that there is still another functionary involved for the final appointment, and that I think clears that argument. So that's what those amendments are about. I've already dealt with the designation of one person by the board that was in there. The PC portfolio committee requested the department to consider the inclusion of a representative of the fidelity fund. And in my footnote also say the, what Mrs. Lowe said, this is an odd number, 23, which makes decision making that much easier. Sure.
Well, if we discuss this one, but I'm just a little concerned about the word representativity. So it's not rather diversity, because it's got representativity implying that basically we have now percentages in the country.
This is a provision that crops up quite often in the bill, and we were asked to have a look at it, especially in light of the inconsistency of the wording where it comes to the constitution of the various bodies, I think the key bodies in the law. Consideration must be given to due regard, must be given to, I think, the members who remember those conversations. And we were asked to come back and try and get more consistency in provisions of this nature. And there were also concerns raised, is this going to be interpreted? And isn't that to give rise to legal challenges if people are unhappy with the Constitution? What we've done, Chair, is an alternative option, which set out there on the line. We have a look at section 147, 174.2 dealing with the appointment of judicial officers. So the wording we have here we take really from the Constitution. The need for the Council to reflect broadly the racial and gender composition of South Africa must be considered in the constituted in terms of this section. And section in the Constitution says the need for the judiciary to reflect broadly the racial and gender composition of South Africa must be considered when judicial officers are appointed. Then the other criteria, the suggestion is that they be put in a separate new sub-clause. When constituting the council, the following factors must, as far as practicable, be taken into account. The objects of the council, representation of persons with disability, regional representation, experience, and all these were in the original sub-clause. I just want to go back to sub-clause 1, the minister's appointees. The council consists of the following members, subject to subsection 4.3, for the proper persons designated by a minister and the tenure of the minister, by virtue of their knowledge and experience, are able to assist the council. This is the IPASA model that we borrowed the wording from in subsection 4. The person referred to in subsection 1C may not be designated as a member of the council if he or she is a public service servant, a member of parliament, any provincial legislature, or any municipal council, or is an office bearer or employee of any party, movement, organization, or party political nature. So that's clause 7, the preliminary options we were asked to put together.
would be brave enough to say, we haven't done it. And then what? Do they go back to the drawing
board? That's the point. You know, that's the question. This council has not complied with the objectives of the council. And the minister can then dissolve the whole. I mean, subject to an inquiry by a judge, because if you're not complying with the objects of the act, then the minister can dissolve.
By the way, I will not contemplate putting this law as a judicial commission.
Mr. Dyer, and then since you have a hand up.
To prevent this scenario from playing out, because it is realistic, and so should we perhaps look at some alternative forms that might factor in at least 7% of council, which we will.
That would then go down to your bodies that are designated people. You have to make that applicable right down to everybody, including the ministers or questions. Which, so I'm just saying, is it workable yet? You know. Prescribing to all the constituent bodies that they must take their left of competence of that quorum. And how you then, we're getting very technical. The parliament required. No.
No, but we're working towards that. Well, as a country, we should actually have that situation. No, no, it's not the party. It's what we want in the ideal world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's only 25 plus 12. Are you asking for a break now?
Yes, that's fine. No, that's fine. That's good. It's quite a number of those things that come for 15 or whatever.
Huh? Yeah.
So, just more on page 19. That is terms of purpose of the council.
Yes.
If we look at terms 5 and 7, 5.
All 7,
5,
5, 5, 5.
Yes, 5. All the technical vocational training requirements that can take attendance for pupils comply with before they can be admitted by the court as a legal practitioner. I think you just have to ask people to go up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. As legal practitioner.
The one, 8. Ah. Should come up. All right, which is the... You put that down to your title. All right. Let's go for lunch and come back at 2. Thank you.
Oh, that's so cute.
The committee told me that they're not locking the venue, so we have to call it together. And Evanani has got experience. We've got to come along with us, I'm sorry. Not locking. Okay.
Thank you.